Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you much for joining us today.
Morning, John. How are you?
Yes, very well. Enjoying a nice sunny day here in London.
Yeah, long may it last. Indian summer.
Indeed. It's certainly been a little bit warmer than it was, I think, last year. So, yeah, long may that continue. So, Alan, we're going to be discussing a number of equities a little bit later on in the podcast, but we're going to start off with looking at the key market themes. And the key market themes, of course, today is energy and the falling prices in equities on the back of that. But just before we get into that, just a note to listeners, if you'd like to get the latest podcast delivered to your inbox, do go to the UK Investor Magazine website where you can sign up for our newsletter. We send out 5 new newsletters a week with news articles in, as well as our latest podcast. So do get yourself signed up for that. So, Alan, FTSE 100, looking at it now, it's currently down about 1.5%.
Yeah.
And it's quite an interesting story to see how things have changed in the last 24 hours, because it's all around the energy markets. Now, the energy markets yesterday were being attributed to actually giving some strength to the FTSE 100. We saw higher oil prices, which transferred into higher prices of companies like BP and Shell and the FTSE 100, major constituents. They saw a rally and they actually saw some outperformance against some of their European counterparts. Now, 24 hours later, we have energy prices being blamed for a 1.5% decline in the FTSE 100. Now, it's a broad-based decline that we're seeing today. Most sectors are down in the FTSE 100. How much of a concern do you think this should be, Alan? Do you think it's something that, yes, we're going to see rising prices and it could reduce the spending power of consumers? I mean, is that the big story here, or is it more looking at the other factor of rising inflation could lead to a tighter monetary policy decision from major central banks sooner than the market may like?
I think it's a cocktail of all those factors, John. I think we've of course already seen the problems that the rising gas prices are causing, with collapses of some of the smaller suppliers who didn't lock their futures in, and of course we're seeing an increase in the oil prices. There's also the prospect of greater demand as restrictions are lifted on travel and holidays. But then, of course, along with that, along with the prospect of the higher energy prices and oil prices, and of course prices at the pump as well, we then have the prospect of the ending of the furlough schemes. And of course, we're in the US futures are down at the moment as we record this, and of course we have the private payrolls data due out today, and of course the big one on Friday, which is the non-farm payrolls data. And I think at that point we will get some initial indications of what's happening in the jobs market. Of course, as furlough schemes end, people go back to work, some people will find they don't have a job to go back to, and it's really I think the uncertainty around that, and of course the rising energy prices, rising gas prices, it's just fueling uncertainty. And of course, if there's uncertainty in the market, we'll see a big sell-off. There are, of course, corners in the market today which aren't seeing a sell-off, and one of those we're going to talk about shortly, which is, of course, in the supermarket Tesco, which has produced a great set of numbers today. But I think across the market today, we saw the technology stocks on the, across the pond fall yesterday. They rebounded strongly, but the futures are pointing to a big fall in those stocks too, which will of course take the markets down with it. But it's uncertainty in general, fueled by the end of the furlough scheme and, of course, rising energy prices.
Indeed, indeed. And I think, obviously, the end of the furlough scheme is particularly important for the UK economy. But looking further afield, and I think this way why we may be seeing some quite pronounced downside in markets today is because, as you mentioned, on Friday, we have the US non-farm payrolls, which if we see a particularly poor set of data from the United States in terms of the health of their economy, we're already in a situation where we're seeing rising prices and that's eroding consumer spending. But if we do start to see a real shift to the downside in terms of the health of the US economy and the jobs that it can create, it does raise fears significantly of stagflation, which has never been good for markets in the past. So I think maybe what we're seeing today is some positioning ahead of that big risk event, which it now is, with the rising prices for the non-farm payrolls on Friday. So that's going to be a particularly interesting point. And I do think if we see a poor figure from there, we could see a bloodbath in markets. So it's going to be an interesting day for markets on Friday. But let's go back to something more positive now, Alan. And it's a supermarket sector. Now, when we're sort of looking at UK supermarkets, we've seen quite an interesting month or so with the takeover battle going for Morrisons. Over the weekend, we had the last and final bids from US parties, and I think there was a deal agreed for Morrisons at $2.87, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
So that deal looks to be done. On the back of that, on Monday, we did see some stronger prices in the likes of Tesco's and Sainsbury's and also Ocado, because I think there's a school of thought that there is some interest out there for the UK supermarkets. And Morrisons may not be the last one that receives some takeover interest. So we saw some strength at the beginning of the week, but Tesco is really building on that today, Alan, with a strong set of figures. What do they look like?
Really strong set of figures, John. Yeah, they've really, I think, surprised analysts. Analysts expected a strong set of numbers. But, you know, this is all against the backdrop of a shortage of labour and cost pressures. The company grew sales, and including fuel, by just under 6% to $30.5 billion, and pre-tax profits rose by 107% to $1.1 billion. So, very, very strong performance, despite a $193 million payout to shareholders relating to a legal case. You may recall a few years back there was an accounting scandal in 2014. So there was a payout to shareholders. Looking forward to the full year, the company said it expects operating profits of $2.5 billion, up $700 million from previously, and also, of course, further supporting the share price. Tesco has commenced a share buyback, $500 million shares bought, to be bought within a year. And throughout the process, it's holding its dividend at 3.2p. The CEO said the profits grew ahead of expectations. A major outperformance, and of course, you know, perhaps this is why there is so much interest in the sector. You know, the analysts that are working for the investors are seeing the strong performance, and of course, companies that they see might be undervalued, although they may look fully valued to us. They are looking, they're within the sight of these huge private equity groups, and of course, as you rightly said, John, you know, Morrisons is very much. There's a battle going on there at the moment. It looks like the deal is done at 287p a share, but never say never. There could be an 11th hour surprise there. But of course, it also adds buoyancy to the sector in general, as investors are now speculating on who could be next. Tesco, of course, has the largest market share in the sector, so it's likely to stay untouched. But of course, who knows? We're seeing these audacious bids come from the US. There could be a much bigger one coming in for the likes of Tesco or Ricardo at some point. But either way, it's very buoyant. And of course, with this uncertainty, the one investment you can always bank on is that of food retailing. You know, we'll always need food, and we'll always find a way to pay for it.
Interesting point, actually, Alan. Do you think that there's an element of a defensive nature of some of the purchases that we're seeing in the supermarkets at the moment.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think we're seeing all this uncertainty. And as with COVID, you know, the food retailers are the one constant. It's also, you know, I think we're going to see possibly a recovery in commodities too at some point if the uncertainty continues. And of course, that will feed back into precious metals and other commodities too, but particularly precious metals. So of course, there is that backdrop too. But food retailers, historically, you know, if there is uncertainty, the food retailers always make for very sound investments. And maybe that's part of the thinking behind these private equity groups that are making these moves.
Yes, it's certainly going to be an interesting finish to the year for these companies, given the interest that's swirling around those at the moment. So let's move on now, Alan, to look at a company which obviously has had a torrid time over the last 18 months with the pandemic, but it's on the beach, the holiday booking website. What's been happening there?
So on the beach, of course, is the it's the one of the UK's largest online beach holiday retailers. And it's a speculative pun, but I just think that that, you know, we're seeing all of this uncertainty at the moment. But as things get ironed out, and of course travel restrictions are being lifted by now, it's these sort of retailers where you can go on and book your holiday online, you know, literally in minutes, that are going to be front and center, you know, certainly for recovery in the next 6 to 8 months. And of course, people are now even looking to next summer to book up their holidays for next summer. So you know, on the beach are very much in that in that area. Now the company has undergone, as you say, a fairly torrid time, but it recently raised a further 26 million at 330p, so it's now very well funded. And of course, we're in the run-up now to a full year trading statement, which will probably arrive sometime in the next few weeks, probably early November. But I'm just looking at the chart, and it's had an interesting run this year. Of course, with the placing coming back in July, shares were down as low as 285p, but the placing took place at 330p. So that's kind of midway on the current price range for the year. And indeed, you know, you would expect that a holiday company would be sort of the last thing investors would want to look at right now. But actually, I think this could make for a very interesting play. So we're seeing shares at 365p above that placing price at the moment. They've traded as high already on the year as 517p and as low as just over 200p or £2, of course, in cash terms. But at the last set of interim results, the company said it was now well capitalized and in good shape to continue, and it's well placed for a recovery going forward. It's got the over 20% market share in the UK, which is absolutely key. And of course, with the demise of Thomas Cook, that old style of travel agent is really fast receding into history now, and this is the way this is the way holiday companies are going to run their businesses from here on in. And the CEO Simon Cooper was very bullish in his comments at the interim results and said, while the recovery is likely to take some time, it's going to be a challenging environment, but the way On the Beach differentiates itself from its competitors and its relatively low cost as a business, they're positioned very well to take full advantage of any recovery. So I just think this could be a bit of a dark horse opportunity for recovery. You know, notwithstanding what we're talking about today, you know, once the payrolls are gone and once the market's made that adjustment, you know, we've still got people wanting to go on holiday and really huge pent-up demand for a beach holiday again. And I think I think this could be a dark horse surprise investment for the next 6 to 8 months.
I mean, when looking at the most recent period, Alan, I mean, is there any indication that things are starting to pick up? Have they made any sound in terms of what demand's been like since we've been able to be more free on, to take holidays?
Well, certainly the interim results for the 6 months to the end of June made for pretty dismal reading. I mean, there was a huge fall in revenues, a huge fall in profits, and of course there was a loss before tax of $9.5 million compared to a profit of $2.3 million previously. So the actual performance just reflected, of course, the fact that holidays basically stopped dead. There were no bookings at all, apart from maybe a brief splurge last summer. But now with that lifting, and also, of course, you know, we've seen a reasonably buoyant travel period. You know, I know lots of people have been away during the summer and taken flights and gone away. So I think the upcoming numbers, which we'll be seeing a trading statement in the next few weeks from the group. I think given the fact that there's a floor under the share price with that placing at 330 pence, shares are trading just above that now. I think the company could well be positioned to surprise the market with a buoyant trading statement. And of course, if provided there are no further lockdowns going forward, then I think we're going to see winter bookings. We're going to see bookings for next summer, and this could be one of the surprise investment packages for 2021-2022.
Yes, yeah. I mean, certainly, sort of looking at margins, it had previously, the gross profit margins there are particularly attractive when it was operating without any restrictions. So it's going to be interesting to see how much those bookings come back, and that we could see a potential bit of upside here in the shares if there is an upside surprise on their numbers. So definitely a set of results to keep an eye on there. So, Alan, we're going to move on now to the final company that we're going to discuss today. And it is one that we have touched on the podcast previously. And it's one listed on the Aquis Exchange. Mm. It's a particularly exciting company because it's based here in the UK. It's very much focusing on British enterprise in what it's doing in a market that may have traditionally been sort of looked at a more global one. It's taken a very British approach to things. And it's a British honey company. What's the latest update from them?
Well, this is interesting. As an Aquis company, when we've spoken about Aquis before, of course, John, there are the Access listings where companies, IPOs and SPACs and so on. Then there's the Apex section of Aquis, which is the growth section. So the company has to meet a set of criteria to qualify for that. And British Honey Company is very much in the Apex section and the growth section. So British Honey Company shares have actually slipped back. They're trading currently at 115 pence on the year. They've traded as high as 120, and the lows are just under where we are now, really. So there's been very little share price movement despite a lot of activity. British Honey Company is the leading independent honey producer in the UK, produces about 7 million tonnes per annum, and it's got operations all over the UK, Cotswolds and Oxfordshire and so on. Also owns the Keeper Spirit brand, which is sold, has a very strong distribution network, and that includes Waitrose, Majestic, Amazon, Not on the High Street, and so on. And also owns a number of organic gin and whiskey brands, and other alcoholic based drinks. It's just got a unique position in the market, has done a number of innovative deals. For example, with the List Distillery in Florida, undertook a share swap. This is last year. And it has a distribution agreement with the English Heritage at over 400 monuments. And of course, as those sites are opening back up now, we're going to see evidence of further sales from that. has a joint, has a distillery arrangement with Cottesmore at the Tasmore Park Estate in Oxfordshire. And of course, in February this year, acquired Union Distillers, and there was a placing to raise from that funds from that, and that's very much a transformational move for the group in terms of developing their reach via the brands they offer, and of course their distribution network. They also have their own IT platform, a bespoke end-to-end IT platform to support their distribution, and that gives the group entire traceability for each bottle and jar that's sold. So that's very important, of course, in these times. A couple of weeks ago, the company announced interim results to June the 30th. Revenues basically trebled to 3 million from 1 million previously. Gross profit of 1.5 million to 750,000 previously. Operating losses increased to 1.3 million from 1.3 million previously. And the group ended the quarter with cash of 1.8 million. And of course, that's largely down to the acquisition of Union Distillers, which the revenues from which are just now starting to impact on the company. And I think, again, we'll be seeing a trading update soon from the group. And that should reflect the sales from Union Distillers during that period. We've also seen a bit of, I say, board shenanigans. There's been a lot of restructuring in the board. Michael Williams, the long-standing chief executive and chairman, has stepped down to a non-exec role. Philip Sears has also resigned as a non-exec and will remain on as consultant. Richard Day has also resigned. Alice Morris, who was very much involved in developing the business, has stepped up to the role of Chief Ops Officer. So currently the board doesn't have a CEO, and I think that's probably accounted for the weakness in the share price. But of course, when that CEO comes in, then I think we're going to see a new direction and a board appointed that can actually take the business forward. It's at an interesting juncture. It's got a very strong range of brands. Sales are growing, and clearly we now need to see the board come together and coordinate their efforts and drive the business forward to the next level.
Indeed, indeed. And as I said at the beginning, a particularly unique business in its offering, the likes of vodka and bourbon, which traditionally are associated with other countries, but they're obviously putting a British spin on that. But just looking at the figures there, Alan, we've seen quite a significant increase in sales, and that's due to the inclusion of bringing a new business to British Honey. But just looking there, you know, at the administrative expenses and, you know, what that's doing to the overall profit there, although we saw a significant jump in profits, again, we did see a net loss there. Yeah. What do you think we're going to see from British Honey to get them into a profit? Do you think it's going to be a reduction in some of these costs, or do you think we're going to see a real power on in the revenue that they're producing that's going to take them above that level of the costs?
It's going to be a combination, John. I mean, the operating losses were largely down to the costs associated with the acquisition, of course, embedding that and the restructuring that is inevitable from an acquisition of that size, you know, given the size of the company at the moment. I mean, currently the company has a market capitalization of just over 19 million. It acquired Union Distillers, well, with the earnout, it's up to 10 million. So it's over half the size of the business already. So so given that, the operating losses were down to those costs, but of course sales and profits will continue. And I think, you know, once those operating losses have really gone, I think we're going to see the company power on and power ahead. But I think there's the uncertainty with the board restructuring has really held the share price back. I mean, it's been pretty inactive anyway, largely speaking. But I think as an investment opportunity and an investment proposition overall, it's a really attractive one. As you rightly say, you know, these are British spirit brands, and of course they have the honey sales and the interest elsewhere too. So I think it's a good it's a good investment proposition overall. But now with the Union Distillers embedded into the company, I think we're going to see things start to move.
Indeed. I think it's a nice growth story there for a British business, and I'm sure a company that we will discuss on the podcast again. So let's just run through the companies that we've discussed today. So at the beginning there was Tesco's, trading in the ticker of TSCO. It was then On the Beach with the ticker of OTB. And just then was British Honey Company that trades in the ticker of BHC. Alan, thank you very much for joining the podcast today.
Thanks again, John.
Just a note for listeners, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, if you do want to receive the UK Investor Magazine newsletter, if you visit the website, you'll be able to find various locations where you'll be able to register for that. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.